I'd like to welcome everybody to the Fire Committee, Monday, March 6, 2017. We're a little behind schedule. We'll make that up in due time. I just want to welcome everybody. First order of business is approval of the minutes from April 4th.
So moved.
Second.
Is there any discussion? Hearing none, the motion be approved, blow the gavel. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it. Now we're in the public comment period. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to share any knowledge, wisdom, for what they did over the weekend? Okay, we'll move on to item number three, which is the review of the year-end report. I'll turn this over to our staff.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. I presented the committee a full detail of our annual report, but the Deputy Chief of Admin Services, Chief Mixon, will go over a synopsis of our year-end report. By all means, he's here to answer questions. If he can answer, I'm here. Chief, go right here.
Thank you, sir.
Does anybody need a copy other than a handwritten copy?
Yeah, we got one. We're good, thank you.
All right, good morning, everybody. Like Chief said, that's a lot of data in that book that we just handed you. Not only for y'all's benefit, but we use that during the year just to kind of see where we are, what we did, if people have questions during the year. So a real broad scope of the data. So just a quick overview of what we did last year. This is our emergency response calls, 8,841, up about 600 from last year. As in years past, the medical calls continue to be our number one call for service. Throughout the nation, that's kind of the trend. Years ago, the fire departments were smart enough to get into that business. They saw the fires going down and medical calls going up. So statistically, that's our highest call during the year. And that involves, you know, anything from a stump toe all the way up to the most serious medical call. In Mount Pleasant, as you know, we run every medical call. We don't, like a lot of districts, we don't pick and choose. We go to everything because we consider that those are our citizens. And a lot of times we can get there several minutes ahead of the ambulances. So that's what we do. Good intent calls, those are dispatch canceling a route, things that were on the way, and they say, you know, never mind, that was a false call, you can cancel. False alarms, service calls, and then we get into the few hundreds. Hazardous conditions, which can be a fuel leak, propane leak, things like that. Fires. Of that, 38 were structure fires, so those fires encompass woods fires, car fires, things like that. So the structure fires are online, kind of similar for the past year, 5 years. Then property use type, residential construction is the number one place that we go. That includes apartments as well as single family dwellings. Single family dwellings are our number one property use type, but apartments and things like that are in that too. And then healthcare, that's where we see the nursing homes. Close to 1,000 calls, a little over 1,000 calls last year in the nursing homes, and that's included in that healthcare segment. Here's our public relations hours. So public appearances is our highest thing. That's where we go out in the public. We might have a truck at an event. We talk to people about all types of things, what we do, fire safety, just being out in the public for an event and getting ourselves out there and allowing the public to interact with us. And pre-plans, where we go into the businesses and talk to them, get their contact info, public fire education. And then car seats is at the bottom, but that's something you'll continue to see rise. Our car seat program is back and in full swing. We've gotten a large donation of car seats from DHEC. And you'll see more and more events where we're installing car seats. Our people are technicians now. So there's a lot of steps that are involved in that process. So next year, you'll probably see that a good bit higher on the list. Inspections. This is a small division, but they're really busy, as you can imagine, with all the growth in the town. They have to inspect each new business. So an apartment building, they'll be on each floor and each room multiple times checking penetrations in the walls, sprinkler heads, electrical, all that stuff. So they're pulled in multiple directions. They do the routine inspections in the restaurants and the churches and things, checking suppression systems and fire extinguishers and things of that nature. But they're also doing a lot of new construction. So a really busy division, but they're increasing each year, and we brought on some part-time people to help us keep those numbers continue to rise.
Ask a quick question.
Yes, sir.
So when you go into a business and you see that the lighting
is out or broken, do you go to the business owner and you tell them to fix it?
Yes, sir. Last year, we implemented an electronic system. Before, it was all paper. But now we have electronic system on iPads. So we will show the manager or the owners there, we'll show them that, get the email address, and we'll say, well, here's the violation. You have 30 days to complete said violation. They'll get that email, and then we'll go back, and they have a certain number of days each successive time, and it gets lower and lower to, until the item is corrected. And depending on the seriousness, there's not very many that are very serious, but depending on the seriousness of it, it may be something that they need to address right there if it's a life safety issue. But yes, sir, they're given the documentation.
Good.
On which codes they violated. So here's a five-year comparison chart of where we've been. Emergency responses continuing to rise, almost 3,000 in the last 5 years. Our supplemental activities, the things we talked about when we're out in the public, continuing to rise. Training hours staying about the same. 2012, we had a larger number of training hours. That's because we sent five recruits to the Fire Academy. So they were in training for a long time, and that boosted that year. Fire loss, it was a pretty big year for us fire loss-wise. Mm-hmm. We had two large structures actually side-by-side in the neighborhood, separate incidences, but very large homes that contribute to probably at least half of that, if not more.
Yeah. Just a question, does the rising property values impact that as well? Help more?
You know, with fire loss, it's not an exact science. It's an estimate from our guys. So it doesn't come from an insurance company or an adjuster. It's kind of a, well, you know, the homes in this area are about $100,000 or so, just a random number. We think it's about that, or, you know, two rooms burned, probably $50,000 in furniture. So it's really not an exact science. I wish we could get it closer, but, I mean, yes, sir, to answer your question, I think that has contributed probably in the last 5 years, or if we look 10 years out, that's probably a good bit of it. But, again, a couple big fires this year really jumped that up.
Is there any accepted methodology to get to that number that's used in the profession?
You know, I think most departments, because our reporting system is based on a national system. We have to report to them to be compliant. So they give us some standards, but there's nothing really, it's an estimate. I don't know how we could move to a better estimate. If we could work with the insurance companies, I don't know how that data flows, and that's probably something we should look at to get, you know, a better guess, or not a guess, but make it not a guess and make it actual data.
Yeah, I just have a little bit of discomfort with putting that kind of information in an annual report that,
right,
without some sort of understanding. People look at that and may think, my gosh, you know, what's going on in town as opposed to, you know, this person.
Right.
So if we could find a way to either remove that or keep it in there with some explanation, some methodology, I think that would be maybe strengthen the report.
Mr. Bremer brings up a good point. You know, initially, if somebody were to take a look at that, they'd question what the response times were and why it created so much damage. So we just want to make certain that that's not attached to our fire department.
May I elaborate on that? We could get the report from insurance company, but the only issue there is to be time delayed in giving that information. But that is possible to put the exact figures if they would give that to us, but it would be time delayed. But your question about response time, these two major fires, when we got to both of those fires, basically the fire was already through the roof when we got there. It was already fully involved, mm-hmm, when we got to those situations.
Right.
So it did not impact our response time with that loss. It just was the assumption of the fire when we got there.
I'm not suggesting that, you know, it was due. I'm just saying somebody in the public could look at that and raise the question if it was regarding the response times. And so we might just caveat that some of those numbers like that with an explanation.
We will do that, yes, sir.
Thank you.
And our inspection of the codes, our code enforcement continues to rise, and then loss controls, those continue to rise too, but we equate that to, and that's the entire town's loss controls. I'm sure you're aware of the fire department kind of is the gatekeeper for loss controls. So obviously as our calls go up, as police go up, as Mr. Peel's trash can touches each day go up, to me that makes sense. That's all I have, unless you have any other questions.
Well, yep, thank you very much.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, the emergency responses and the numbers that are going up, we've all kind of talked about it before, but it's the increase of 600-700 or more a year is well beyond our growth as a community population-wise. I mean, services by the public, and it's something that we have to keep telling. You'll be hearing us talk about it more during the budget process and ways to try to curb it, but the calls keep coming in, and we have to keep responding.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Chief.
Yes.
Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll move to item four, five-year expenditure analysis.
Carrie, is this video?
Yes, I just got it in the next. Maybe it's if you have another presentation?
Yes. Thank you.
Let's see.
Let's see, you can.
That's the one I'm talking to.
That's the thing, yes, so come on.
No, it's fiscal year 13 to 17.
Yes. This is a report that our chairman, Mr. Owen, asked me to get for review. And basically what it is a five-year budget review of our fire department.
Technology is a great tool unless it doesn't work.
Thank you very much. Here we go. Okay. I broke this down from the last 5 years, and we did it in situations that break down from our budget to our personnel. As you can read from fiscal year 2013 to the present, the fire department budget went from $6.8 million up to $10.5 million. That's operating budget in those 5 years. Personnel went from 110 personnel to 122 personnel in that five-year span. So as you can see, our budget increase and also our personnel that we people brought online increased in those 5 years. Yes, sir.
Chief, how many of those additional personnel were firefighters as opposed to?
All of us are firefighters.
They're all firefighters?
Yeah, all the increase is firefighters. And the big increase, we opened up station number six. We had hired 12 persons to bring that station online. All 12 of the people are firefighters. So that is the breakdown of budget and personnel itself. Next slide will show you expenditures. And I just put the major expenditures for each one of those years, as you can see with our budget. As the first year, as you can see in 13, we bought the fire boat on, we put our burn tower in service, and we bought an air light truck on service. The second year, we put a rescue pump and replaced our rescue pump for our replacement program, $800,000. And also that fire engine, it's also a replacement engine for a new engine. We brought on our second QRV also that year there, which is those quick response vehicles that you see that reduce the wear and tear on our engine. We put those in service. Then in year 15, you can see what we put two pickup trucks in service, chief vehicle. We replaced our deputy fire marshals. We put our airbag. This is airbag for rescue four. A group of airbags that we got the capability to lift heavy vehicles or equipment off personnel. And it can lift up to tons of equipment off it. Also replace a generator. In year, last year, we replaced three of our battalion chief trailblazer with Tahoe, which gave them a command board in the back and made them more efficient. And also make all of them look just alike. So we can operate directly and their unit become a command, mobile command post also with that improvement. And also we put two cardiac monitors in service. Then this past budget, year. The biggest thing is we opened up station number six, which is about almost came up with a total cost of $3.8 million. But that cost also included the cost we put in that was operating the temporary station six until we brought that station online. We put all that cost, so I put all that in one cost factor because that was part of the cost of station six having temporary station. We bring that online. So that's where that $3.8 million come into operation there. Then we replaced our two deputy fire marshal vehicles. We bought a new battalion chief online and replaced that vehicle. We put all-terrain vehicle out of Station 5, and the cardiac monitor. This is a major increase. What happened there, the technology changed in those cardiac monitors. Well, I used to go buy one for about $20,000. With the new advances, they doubled in prices. So we had to buy one in Europe, and we got one coming out of budget this year to keep up with the technology and also make us comparable with Charleston County EMS. My belief is that we are paramedics, and we should have the same equipment and the same training so our customers can get the same treatment. So that is the major cause. So that is a view of the expenses and also our budget for the last 5 years.
Chief, as I realize that our budget went from 2016 to 2017, went from $8.3 million to $10.5 million. The contributing factors, some of what you just listed here under fiscal 17?
One of the biggest ones you could have done under fiscal 17, last year our health care costs were added into the fire department budget. I think that was like $1.8 million itself. It used to be broke out of departmental, but put in each department. So that paid $1.8 million, but today that is probably the major increase you will see. But a lot of it is, to be quite honest with y'all, it's the cost of doing business and the price of stuff each year. That's why you see the cost went from $10.5 million. Mm-hmm. It's basically because the cost of doing things and salaries increase and operational costs.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to ask, Chief, the $40,000 cardiac monitor, is that a replacement for one that you had, or is that?
Yes, sir. No, it's a replacement for one we had.
So what do we do with the ones that we're no longer using?
We trade them in and get a discount on them. We trade them in. And also we keep a couple in just for training purposes, but what we do with them, we trade them in to give us, it's a very small discount, but it's a discount. We trade them in because technology is antiquated. And so with a lot of the Bluetooth operational now, you have to have that capabilities.
I know there's a government website where you can sell equipment.
Yes, sir.
Do we ever utilize that and try to sell us equipment, maybe to smaller counties or other places?
We try that, Mr. Burma, but we really don't get a lot of value for it. We find that for our history, we do a better job of trading it in with the manufacturer themselves, or go to a private vendor and try to sell them. We get a better price for that. And we have donated some equipment to a small department that was antiquated that we can use. We have done it, just basically it's just a donated to them.
Great. Thank you.
Let me just ask you, Chief, DFIBs, we have them all around. Do we have those outside or easily accessible by our citizens?
No, sir, they're inside the building because you have to keep them locked down because you don't want them to be damaged. And use inappropriate, but they are inside our public buildings. Anytime the building is open, operational, a business inside of them, we have one in all the public buildings. But we don't leave them outside because of the chance somebody damaging or even stealing them.
Well, let me ask you now. So we're out on the football field, kid that gets a hard hit, has an issue. Where do they get a defib?
I've got one of my, we have paramedics that are standing by me, have one with them.
Yeah, but you got to call the fire department. They're going to have to come to the field.
Most of the time.
Instead of running over and grabbing one. And
most of the time, Mr. Senator, we have firefighters that are actually to the field.
Oh, I know, during game time.
Yes, sir, during
game time. I'm talking about regular practice. I mean, that was my, because I was out at Park West looking around, and it just struck me. I started looking for them. I couldn't find any. And so I started thinking, you know, as a coach, when a kid gets hit, and some kids, you know, you may not know whether they have heart issues or not at a young age. If they do go into arrest, you have to find a purple shirt. He's got to go get into the building to get it and then come back out. Kind of defeats the purpose. I mean, to me, I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they've had problems with that before, but sure would like to see a more accessible to the, you know, so that in the event there is an issue, somebody can get their hands on them quickly and address the situation.
If that was a desire of the council to do that, I think we can find it through a budget, but I would have to warn you there's a possibility. In my opinion, are they being abused, are being stolen, are they not there when we need them? And you make a very good point. I think we have to outweigh that cost against basically someone just taking them, and we don't have no way to protect them, because if you want them accessible as you require, they would have to be there open for the general public to get them. That's my opinion of it. I think it will, you have a very good chance of someone just taking advantage of them.
I agree. I think it'd be nice to have them accessible, but you know, we usually have police officers at Park West, the substation there, and recreation staff has access to those. It may not be immediate, but I think within a few minutes, I think those would be accessible, but...
You know, I don't know, coaching out there a lot, even if you had to go over to the police substation, it's a good trek over there to get them. You know, they could be inaccessible, they could be somewhere, and by the time you get it and get back. I'm just wondering, I mean, if we haven't had any problems, maybe we could put one or two out there and just see if we have any issues. Clearly, if we have an issue, then maybe we won't do it, but I've heard other places have them. Some of these people that go off on tournaments tell me that they are out located, easily accessible. I just don't want to have an issue come up and there's not one available. We've been fortunate not to, but it could very easily happen. That's why they have them out all these places to start with.
Well, maybe we could dedicate, have some dedicated personnel that would be responsible for them at the time during practice times. But, you know, you're talking about several areas within the town. I don't know if it's going to be feasible or beneficial financially. Certainly, a life is very important and most important. But, you know, Chief, what can we do to increase the DFIBs? I mean, what do you need from council?
Well, what we do, we respond quickly with a call. If council allocate the money to have them replaced and put there, it's a cause, and put them in place. If you allocate the money, we could find a way to put them there. But to me, it's a cause of putting them there and also the chance of being damaged. Like you said, Mr. Santos, I don't have any stats that will tell you that will happen, but just my experience, I think that would become an issue, in my opinion.
Well, even if you put them up high, like say by the concession stand up on the wall, where it's cut out in the open where people can see it easily. Yeah, if you put it around the side or the back of the building, I could see somebody. But if you put it up in the front and put it high so kids can't get it, an adult can reach it, but kids can't reach it. I don't want to see an issue. I mean, we put them out there for this reason, but if they're not accessible, then it might as well not be there.
Or in the lockbox.
Well, no, you got the glass. You punch the glass out, you got to pull it out from the glass. But, I mean, put it up high enough to where kids can't get it, but an adult can reach it.
If it's your desire, we could, you know, if it's mainly for athletic fields and outside, then what all these fields have, these complexes have, they have a restroom area. You put on the side of a restroom and some kind of, you know, something you have to breach to be able to get it out. Anywhere else, or putting it with anyone else besides giving every coach a defibrillator.
Right.
People know when they go to these places where that location is to use a restroom, and they're going to know if there's a problem, that's where they are.
Right.
They can get there quickly. Other than that, I don't know any other way to be able to provide them externally outside somewhere. Because if you put it anywhere else, people aren't going to know they're there, or there could be in some other location at the complex.
Gary, I'm thinking above the, right, I mean outside, but at the door. To the restroom, because if you put it behind a door, then people can shut the door, and then they have an opportunity to mess with it. But I think if it's out in the open, but up high, they know to go to that spot you're talking about. But it's outside, so less chance of people messing with it, because they'll get caught. Somebody will see them. I don't know. I'm just trying to think of a way to make sure we have them out there, because that's the reason we put them out there. But if they're not accessible, then they're really not doing us any good. And you know what? If you have an issue where it happens, then we pull them in. You know, I mean, I have no problem with that, but I'd at least like to have them available in the event there's a situation, because, you know, the first time we have an issue, you know, I mean, it's not worth it. I'd rather have them out there. Let's just try. But put them in a place where you can see from all around so nobody can, you know, like I said, I think if you put them in a bathroom, you go, that's the opportunity when nobody's watching that they can do stuff. But you put them outside where people, coaches, and everybody around can see if somebody messes with it. I think it'd be less likely for it to happen.
We're happy to work up a recommendation. We have to include it as part of the budget, and that's committee's desire.
All right.
Yes, sir.
And that gives you some time to analyze what is going to benefit us most, so I would appreciate doing that.
I was thinking, I mean, usually at practice time, there are recreation staff that are assigned those complexes. Mm-hmm. These are portable enough that couldn't the staff have one of these available on the golf cart or something? Or
no, I mean, well, they could, but they're scattered.
They're qualified.
And they're in different locations, and if something were to go wrong, it's going to be difficult for the people to find where they are.
Right.
I mean, you all know, we all coached, and
you
need them, and they're there, and the next minute, you don't know where they are. So in a moment of crisis, you need to know where to go to get it if you need it. one central location.
In other words, if they're out there at Park West, I practiced over Cario Field. The Purple Shirt could be over Cario Field. If you have an issue over here, you know, he's over here. How do you get in touch with the Purple Shirt? You know what I mean? So then he'll have to come all the way over from where he's at, whereas if you have an issue, you got a coach that can run over there, break the glass, get it out, and he's right on it really quick.
I mean, I like the idea of them being available at those times. I'm just not as comfortable with having that kind of equipment when nobody's there, quite frankly. I mean, once practice is over, you've got this equipment sitting out there unmonitored.
But there's other places that are doing it. I'm told people who travel around, there's other places I'm told that does it, and they've got them high enough to where kids can't get to them, but an adult sure can reach up there and grab one. And like I said, put it in an open space where it's out, people all around can see it, so if somebody does mess with it, chances are a coach or a parent or somebody's going to be messing with it. I mean, it isn't rocket science. I think it's pretty easy. We got to try it, and if you have an issue, then we stop.
Well, I think the staff can make a recommendation, and we can look at entertaining that recommendation and doing something about it during budget time. Mr. Cunanes, please stand and state your name and address.
Kevin Cunanes, 3032 River Vista Way. It's a great idea, Gary. One of the things they do in high-rise buildings nowadays is some of the emergency equipment, if you open the cabinet, it signals downstairs to the fire safety director, hey, the cabinet was open. You get some, I don't know what the technology is involved, to know the cost factor, but you may save a device from getting stolen. Just ping the firehouse, the fire station, hey, the device was activated at Park West. They're gonna be responding anyway. So, said, you know, ping 911 saying the thing was opened.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Thank you.
May I come in on that, sir?
Yes, sir.
I don't know what a cost factor into that technology. We'll be willing to look into it, but I think, I don't know if the cost factor would justify us being notified in the firehouse that one being open. And I know there is technology, but we would do that also if you want us to decide what's the cost factor and the technology to make that happen.
Yeah, at this point in time, we don't have any information, so all the information we can get is going to be better, and we'll benefit from it. I guess, really, you've done a great job, and I really want to thank you for bringing all of this forward with the budget personnel. One thing that I would ask is that all of Mount Pleasant residents are concerned with is to ensure, you know, that we have the assets and personnel available to take on any emergency that we have in the fire department. And if you could just let us know and state your position, we'd greatly appreciate it.
Mr. Chairman, that is an easy question to answer. I am confident that we can handle any emergency that comes before us. Of course, there are some things you can't predict, but anything that we can predict and we're planning for an accreditation, we're prepared to handle. And also, you will see in my budget this year, a budget for a replacement of a fire truck. So we have a replacement system, and I do a good job between our administrator and council. I've been very, very fortunate to get what I need to do the job I need to do. So I feel confident I have what I need, the personnel, to do what we need to do.
That's very reassuring. I appreciate that, Chief.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you, too. Is there anything else? Please rise, state your name, your address, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mark Smith, 2716. Chief, two questions, please.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman. In our State of the Town address, I believe the matter that we're talking about possibly happening on a field actually did happen. We were highlighted in our State of the Town address with highlighting some of the... Was there a defib located in the area where the gentleman's heart was restarted, or...
Yes, sir, it wasn't located in the area.
Yep, so just to kind of situate that area, and then correct. Yeah, just making sure everybody heard that, sir.
Appreciate it.
And then the second part is, Mr. Chairman, from the Chief, is there anything that the Town of Mount Pleasant is not providing for you that you need to do your job, sir?
No, sir, there's not. I've been very blessed, and I will tell everybody that I have a great support in my boss, administrator, and council, that we do a great job of analyzing what we do. I don't present budgets on gut feelings. I present budget on data and facts that is given. And whatever I present, I've been able to get what I need.
It's important. Keep coming to the well.
Yes.
Thank you, Chief.
I just wanted, I think Councilman Smith made my point. There was one accessible, when the guy had a heart issue there.
Correct.
And they were able to bring him back.
Yes.
But if there's not one accessible, it's not going to happen. So that was a good point you made.
Thanks.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Brewer?
The cost for an ABD machine is?
$3,000.
$3,000. Thank you.
Anything else? Anything further? We stand adjourned. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Committee, appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
Good question.
Thank you, Lord.
Absolutely.